This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. It's easy to assume that we humans rule the Earth. After all, we can clear-cut forests, we can chop the tops off mountains, we can harvest anything we want from the land or the sea. But before we get too cocky, let's not forget about those other titans of the Earth, the bugs. Take ants, for example. My next guest, who may be the world's greatest ant expert, estimates the number of ants living on Earth today to be 10 to the 16th power. That's 10,000 trillion ants. And he says if you put them all on a scale, they'd weigh about as much as all of the world's humans. Can you believe that? But how did ants and humans, such different creatures, both evolve complex societies? And is that the key to our success? Are our instincts, are your culture and your instincts part of your genes? Just a couple of the questions my next guest, Edward O. Wilson, E.O. Wilson, writes about in his new book, The Social Conquest of Earth. He's professor emeritus at Harvard University in Cambridge. He joins us from WBUR in Boston. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. I'm glad to be back with you.
Your book is called The Social Conquest of Earth, and in it you call humans and insects the two conquerors of Earth. What made us both so successful?
That's a question of questions. You know, it hasn't been addressed much by scientists, and of course, probably not at all by social scientists and others. We have now begun a new line of investigation, and we've developed a new theory of the origin of very advanced social systems like those of ants and bees and wasps on one side that are the dominant forms ecologically among the little things of the Earth and ourselves. We have a couple of questions we need to answer. One is that if those advanced conditions of social organization, which we call eusociality, we could define it in a moment if you like, but if they are so immensely successful, why are they so rare in the course of evolution? Why did they take so long to appear? We're just newcomers, of course, and the social insects that are so dominant around the world on the land didn't show up until well into the Mesozoic, the age of dinosaurs. Before that, there were no creatures like us, either among them or among the bigger animals. So what's the answer to that? We had to develop a new theory which encompassed other things, but also encompassed the possibility to answer that key question.
Mm-hmm. And what is your new theory?
At the foundation, I and a number of others have been seeing for years that there were big problems with the reigning theory, which is called kin selection, theory of kin selection. It has another name, theory of inclusive fitness, but kin selection is the one that's familiar to most people who've taken courses or read about this subject. It's been around for 40 years, but it was showing its age. It was able to seemingly predict some things, but it wasn't able to predict very much, and even the things it predicted seemed not a very good fit after all. Mm-hmm. And so it was necessary. What happened was that the new theory, the old theory, emphasized the relationship between kin, particularly closely related kin, that forms a nucleus of the formation of a very advanced society, and that sort of friendliness, altruistic reciprocity between close kin was the key to how social behavior came about, including very high social behavior.
In other words, if you had a lot of kin around you, you behaved well and kind,
yes, that's right,
toward them.
Yeah, that was a selfish gene.
The selfish view.
In other words, a sacrifice for your brother or your aunt or whatever close kin you have around you. And if you lose in the Darwinian race, I mean, you leave fewer children as a result of that altruistic behavior, leave in the next generation fewer, then it doesn't matter because the close relative has the same genes as you by common descent, and therefore the thing, the traits that made you altruistic can evolve in a strict Darwinian manner. That's why it was sometimes called the selfish gene theory. Mm-hmm. Well, that has, for reasons that I think we could spend the rest of the hour discussing, has largely fallen very far short. Key evidence that was thought to support it has proved not to be true, and it just hasn't lived up to the demands of a really good theory, which is that if a good theory fits a lot of facts and it points clearly to new lines of investigation. The new theory, actually, it's a piecing together of elements that have been with us for some time, and we built up to it, not just through my thinking, certainly, but through the efforts of quite a few people, is that kin selection is not important. I mean, it can occur, but it's most likely would lead to nepotism. It's not an important factor. And whereas group selection had been marginalized in the kin selection scheme, that is, the competition among groups of individuals and the outcome of that competition in altruism that results in group superiority when group is pitted against group. That was marginalized, but now we see that that was a big mistake. Kin selection is not a key factor. Group selection combined with individual classical Darwinian selection, that is, you know, people competing with other people within the same group, that is the key, and now we're back to re-examining group selection, group versus group, in a wholly new way, and it's been yielding new ideas and information already very fast.
Mm-hmm. So then in this theory, the group then seeks to help itself out rather than the working between one-on-one kin. It's all the members of the group that are helping each other succeed.
There's a way of comparing a group and individual level selection. People understand immediately individual level selection.
Right.
Group selection is not hard either. And the little formula that we use just to sort of sum it all up to make it clearer is that within groups, selfish individuals beat altruists. But between groups, groups of altruists beat groups of selfish people. So